Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Finally, I said, you know what? Whatever. You just go wherever you want. I was kind of tired and frustrated with the whole thing. And then, boom, there's trail markers. So I was like, well, I'm glad you didn't listen to me.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about what else the Iditarod, and wrapping up this season of the Iditapod today. I'm your host, Casey Grove. The Iditapod is a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM. That was Wade Mars starting off today's episode. It's Wednesday, and before we park this dog sled, grab some snacks, and curl up in a ball on a little pile of hay, here's one last word from Holly in our marketing department.
Calling all fans of the Iditapod. For a limited time only, you can receive an Iditapod sticker as a thank you gift when you donate online. Visit alaskapublic.org/Iditarod to support us today and keep your public media thriving. Thanks for listening.
That's right. Calling all Iditarod fans. Come one, come all. Step right up. Get your Iditapod sticker here. Last call. That's the siren that sounds in Nome when the mushers come in. I think they cut off the siren at a certain point. They don't do that for every musher. We haven't seen the last of the 2023 Iditarod mushers cross the finish line in Nome under that famed and fancy burled arch on Front Street. But our top 10 are all in. Of course, our champion Ryan Reddington finished yesterday a little after noon, claiming his first Iditarod championship. Then Bethel's Pete Kaiser and ANIAC's Richie Deal in second and third. More about that all-Alaska native podium coming up. Matt Hall, the Two Rivers musher originally from Eagle in fourth, his best Iditarod finish. Then Jesse Holmes and Kelly Maxner in fifth and sixth. That sixth place finish is an improvement of seven positions for Maxner over his previous best. In seventh was Eddie Burke Jr., the presumptive rookie of the year. Eighth place went to Matt Fahler, ninth to Mille Porcild, the top woman finisher in this year's race. And to round out the top 10, Wade Mars with his fifth top 10 finish. That's everybody who's into Nome currently at the time of this recording. The teams still stretch back more than 200 miles to Jed Stevenson in Shaktulik. He's in that red lantern position for now, technically, but with 11 dogs still just behind Jason Mackey into Shaktulik. And Mackey only has 7 dogs, plus there are a handful of other mushers still there altogether, so we'll see later today who's really in the rear. The Iditarod today also announced another scratch. Eric Kelly, who had suffered that ankle injury we heard about earlier in the race. Officially, the Iditarod says, as they often do, Kelly scratched in the best interest of his dog team. We haven't heard if anything else had happened to him. So the small field in this year's Iditarod, the smallest to start the race, has been whittled away down to 29 mushers as of today. That's after 4 scratches. We had Jennifer Labar pretty early in the race at Rainy Pass. She dislocated her finger. Greg Vitello, and then Brent Sass, of course, scratched at Eagle Island, that checkpoint on a remote stretch of the Yukon River. And then today we're hearing about Eric Kelly. As I'm recording this, the next team we're expecting into Nome is that of Hunter Keefe, who's looking to be the second rookie to finish this year's race. We'll have more coming up about Eddie Burke Jr. and the race for Rookie of the Year. We have not one, not two, but 3 dogs of the day, because why not? And 2 listener questions this time. One is a little stinkier than the other, to give a hint, and there are a few different answers for both of those, really. First, though, when Ryan Reddington crossed the finish line in Nome yesterday afternoon, he became just the 6th Alaska native musher to win the Iditarod in the race's 50 years. The 2 mushers that finished behind Reddington, Pete Kaiser and Richie Deal, are also Alaska native, and those two actually live off the road system in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, so that's an added layer. All 3 men say they want to show that rural Alaska mushing is not dying. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan has more about that.
When Pete Kaiser arrives at the finish line in Nome, he's excited despite narrowly missing out on his second Iditarod win. Part of the reason? A historic podium sweep by Alaska native mushers in this year's Iditarod. He says it feels special.
To have 3 out of 4 in the top 3 is, I mean, it's almost unheard of, you know, and aside from some of the earlier days of the race when there was more participation from rural teams and native teams.
Just 4 Alaska native mushers started this year's race. Mike Williams Jr. from ANIAC is still competing. Kaiser, who lives in Bethel, and ANIAC's Richie Deal, who placed 3rd, say they hope their finishes inspire the next generation of mushers, particularly those in rural Alaska, in a year that featured the smallest field in race history. For years, dog teams off the road system in Alaska have been dwindling. But Kaiser and Deal are at the forefront of a small but meaningful resurgence of rural mushing. They live in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, one of the few rural hotspots where major competitive dog races still take place, like the Kuskokwim 300. Deal says the community in the YK Delta has been exceptionally supportive, which allows mushers like himself to maintain their kennels.
There's a lot there to it, but I think it shows that in some parts of Alaska, in rural Alaska, that mushing isn't dying.
Reddington, Kaiser, and Deal consider themselves friends, but competition was fierce in the final 300 miles of trail. The three teams ran at a similar pace in the first half of the race, near the front of the field. Then Reddington, whose mother is a Inupiaq from Unalakleet, surged ahead with two monster runs. Kaiser opted for longer rest instead at one of the final checkpoints. He says he knew his decision might let Reddington slip away, but his team needed a break between Koyuk and White Mountain.
You know, some years you can do that run if they're set up for it. Other years you can't. So
Kaiser says he felt that Reddington was particularly motivated for the win this year.
I knew he'd be real tough to beat coming up the coast. I knew he had a lot of motivation and determination to get it done. And we did too, but, you know, there can only be one winner. So
still, he says they were all friendly at checkpoints, trading stories and tips.
You know, we're competitors, but we're a small-knit group, and we kind of all know each other pretty well. And, it'd be a long day out there if you weren't friends with anybody.
Kaiser says while he was hoping for a win, notching a strong showing for rural and Alaska Native mushers was special.
I think it's great, maybe hopefully inspiring to another generation of kids in the villages and in rural Alaska or anywhere, to take on a crazy sport like this.
All three mushers say they'll keep competing and motivating young mushers, but first they say they'll need a nap. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lex Trinan.
Eddie Burke Jr. of Nenana appears to have claimed Rookie of the Year honors in the 2023 Iditarod, finishing in seventh place late Tuesday in Nome. Friends and family greeted him. Several wore custom sweatshirts with a silhouette of Burke's face and his characteristic long, curly hair. I'm calling it a mullet. Burke says it was a hard-fought battle with Hunter Keefe, who he ran close to for much of the race, and he says it was a fun competition.
Him and I both were just having a good time, but of course, I know he wants Rookie of the Year just as much as I do, and it was fun battling it out, and I don't know, I got to know the guy pretty well through the experience, so that was cool as well.
A former garbage truck driver and amateur boxer, Burke has only been competing in sled dog races for 2 years, but he already has an impressive resume. That includes a victory in the competitive Knick 200 earlier this year. And Burke's hopes for winning Rookie of the Year honors in the Iditarod were almost derailed when he fell off his sled on a stretch of trail on the Yukon River in sub-zero temperatures. Burke got a couple rides, including from two of his competitors, Hunter Keefe being one of them. And then his team continued down the trail, and he met the dogs at the next checkpoint.
I'd say they were a little confused, but they were all healthy and okay.
Side note, Burke also got a ride from a snow machine, and the race marshal, Mark Nordman, using his discretion, allowed Eddie Burke to continue in this year's race. And that seems to signal to me sort of a kinder, gentler Iditarod when it comes to that rule of accepting outside help. Anyway, Burke says he learned his lesson to tie himself to his sled if he's going to sleep on runs. He says he hopes he can take that lesson to the race next year. And it'll definitely be interesting to see Eddie Burke Jr. in next year's race, how high he might place, what team he's running this year, running Aaron Burmeister's dogs. And he joins Matt Fahler as a birthday boy during the Iditarod, so that's kind of fun. Ryan Reddington has certainly learned a lot of lessons out there for himself on the Iditarod Trail in 16 races. He's ended up scratching in seven of those. I think I incorrectly stated yesterday that it was six scratches. There were six scratches for Reddington, though, over a stretch of just eight races. And since his last scratch, Reddington has been in the top 10 4 years in a row, one of those being his first place finish this year. So he's clearly figured out what it takes to win. And we learned more about his race in the press conference right after his race ended in victory. I'm planning to upload that full press conference with Ryan Reddington as a bonus episode of the Iditapod. That might be the real last episode after this one. As we're finishing up this season of the Ididapod, we need to finish up with all of our dogs of the day. Aside from our unending craving for more dog content, we just need to get these dogs out of the yard and onto the pod. Here's Wade Mars again talking about his dog, Jet.
Yeah, actually, Jet, she's one of those dogs that just knows where she is all the time and knows exactly where she's going. And one time in the blowhole coming into Nome, I thought for sure we needed to go to the left, and I kept yelling haw, and I even stopped the team, and I went back and went up and got Jet and turned her to the left, and she kept going right. Finally, I said, you know what, whatever, you just go wherever you want. I was kind of tired and frustrated with the whole thing, and then boom, there's trail markers. So I was like, well, I'm glad you didn't listen to me. Gotcha. So yeah, they're smart.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Can you describe her physically?
Yeah, she's, in the younger days, she was speed demon, you know, sleek, fast girl. She's pretty big and bulky now. She's filled out a lot with age. So she's turned into a real good powerhouse and just a real good workhorse for us. So.
And from an older dog who, it sounds like, has reached Iditarod retirement to a younger, smaller dog in Australian musher Christian Turner's team, it's the aptly named Dingo.
Why is he your favorite?
Because of his name. And he never gets tired. He's got a lot of energy. He's a great dog.
Okay.
Can you describe him physically?
Physically, he's a smaller male, but very leggy and incredibly durable. Like, I have never seen him get tired.
Yeah. And it looks like, you know, mostly black.
Yeah, black with a bit of tan. He's sort of the typical Stevie look for a Stevie sled dog. Uh-huh. But yeah, he's a little bit smaller than some of my other males, but still pulls like a truck.
And how much does he weigh?
I don't know in pounds, but I'd say maybe like 25 kilos.
Okay. So, yeah, not too small, it seems like.
Yeah.
Okay, and did you say how old he is?
He's 3.
Okay, and what position does he run?
He wasn't a leader before I got here, but I've turned him into a leader. So he's an up-and-coming leader, right, for sure.
And any stories of your few weeks of training with him that, you know, where he's...
Teaching him to be a leader has been fun because he's...
And how do you teach a dog to be a leader?
Generally, you put him next to an experienced leader, and then... They'll learn from the experienced leader, but yeah, just repetition and making sure I spend time with him and then getting to know me for sure.
And outside of running, what kind of personality does he have?
Right now he's quite calm, but normally he's very high strung and like happy, jumping around, barking. Isn't that right, big guy?
Dingo, I guess, on that day, taking a break from barking. Now, here's Matt Hall talking about his dog, Dai. That name comes from an old Gold Rush era Alaska town near Skagway. It's still there, it just isn't as big as it used to be. And apparently, Dai is always pretty quiet.
That would be my boy, Dai, spelled D-Y-E-A. He's been my main leader for 3 years now. He was kind of a special boy in the sense he was a misbreeding. He was an accident, and he was the only puppy born in the litter. You know, so it's like, all right, here we got this one dog. He's the only dog, that age group even. We didn't have puppies that year otherwise. And he's turned into the best lead dog there is. He's at lead every finish for me. He's super calm, super quiet. He'll never make noise. You know, he's not jumping and screaming and howling. He's just so focused. His ears are always on me. His eyes are always on me. And he can do anything. I'm not, you know, he can get us through any storm or anything out there, I think. So he's my superstar. He is going on 6 now. Yep. So he's got a couple more good solid years. I usually retire him from racing about 8. This will be his 3rd Iditarod.
Matt Hall talking about his dog Dai there, the strong and silent type, and apparently, as Bob Ross would say, a happy accident. But what if your accidents aren't so happy? Well, that brings us to today's listener question.
Hi, my name is Sylvia from Chicago, and I've recently just gotten into listening to the podcast and following the race, and I'm very, very new to it. And so my question kind of shows my newness, but, and it's a very stupid question, but where do the mushers and the dogs go to the restroom? Like, do they take a break mid-race and are like, hold on, gotta go to the bathroom, or do they just kind of hold it, or I don't know what happens. I'm very, very curious. Thanks.
Where do they pee and poop? Everywhere, just about. Thanks, Sylvia, for joining us here on the Ididapod, and thanks for the stupid question. Just kidding. No such thing as a stupid question. Although, to be honest, when I saw this come in, I thought, well, obviously they just go wherever they want. But people do ask this question all the time, and maybe it's not that obvious to folks outside of Alaska with its vast expanses of wilderness where the world is a dog's toilet, and often all a musher has to do is hide behind a bush, if even that. Outside of checkpoints, mushers will do their number ones wherever is convenient. Seriously, there's plenty of room out there. They might hold it to do a number two, but my guess is that has more to do with not stopping the team if they're mushing along. If they're resting the team between checkpoints and need to go, they just go. According to leave no trace principles, that is the idea that a person in the wilderness should not leave any noticeable trace that they were there, you should dig a hole 6 to 8 inches deep away from a water source to dispose of feces and take any toilet paper with you. I'm not sure that the mushers are doing all of that, but I haven't heard about any issues with that. One small issue for mushers who sit or squat down to pee might be the cold, and depending on where their zippers are, having to expose their skin and expose themselves. This question came up at the live onstage episode of the Iditapod we did back in season 4. Jessica Klaka, who was a rookie in that year's Iditarod and one of the three mushers who joined us, had a funny story about a contraption that her husband bought her to help, he thought, with that. Here's what Jessica Klaka had to say about what happened when she tried to use the shiwi he had given her.
So I was out on the run, and I thought, you know what? The first time I try it, I'm going to put the hook in, I'm going to be parked, and I'm going to try and use this ridiculous... It's just a couple parts, but it looks like a funnel, and then it has two little pieces that connect, so you can pee through your snow, with your snow pants on, and I pull it out, and I've got the hook in, and okay, I'm looking at it, and I'm going to put the two pieces together, and the dogs get excited and pop the hook, and there goes flying, the shiwi goes flying in the air.
I just had to add that music, a little Flight of the Valkyries there, Wagner, you know. Also, there's kind of a leave-no-trace principle in the checkpoints. Mushers, and I think volunteers a lot of the time, will clean up the dog yards. But on runs, the dogs, well, to put it plainly, they poop and run. I don't know if that's something they have to learn or if sled dogs just do it, do it, maybe. But you'll see enough of it on the trail right outside the checkpoints that people call that area the Brown Mile. Mushers feed their dogs before a run, usually, and then they start running, so that'll get them to go. Our dog musher friend Quince Mountain, who ran the 2020 race, told me about Hershey Hill, which can be any hill, really, where something similar happens, that extra exertion prompting a poo or two. And not to be too gross and dwell on this topic, we honestly haven't talked about it that much this year, though. Poop can be a topic of discussion, not just because the mushers and their handlers have to deal with it, not so much out on the trail, but scooping poop around their kennels a lot of the time. In the Iditarod, though, it can also be a good indication of how healthy a dog is. Back in 2019, Ben Matheson was also one of our trail reporters that year, and trying to be analytical, I think, he had this exchange with Ali Zirkel.
Mm. Sounds like a good shakeup, huh?
I was going to ask about a little bit of diarrhea I saw.
I'm doing fine, thank you for asking.
Plenty of laughs for poop jokes along the way. I'm still laughing about standing in the dog yard one year in Unalakleet with Iditarod musher Seth Barnes, who wasn't in the race that time. And another musher whose name escapes me now was talking with Seth and having a very serious conversation about the differences between two different piles sitting there. And something about that conversation sticks with me. Seth has this southern drawl. He's from Alabama. Maybe that's what it was. Incidentally, my boots were those big white ones that we call bunny boots, and my dad had patched those with some glue. The glue turned brown, so that whole race, people always thought I had something stuck to me. Speaking of southern drawls and dog poop, I recorded a video of another veteran musher, Alan Moore, originally from Arkansas and with the voice to prove it, talking to Ali Zirkel, his wife and kennel partner, as she was about to leave the Takotna checkpoint leading the 2014 race. Ali noticed that one of her dogs had had a particularly impressive bowel movement.
Oh my God, that
turd's as big as you are.
Alan was impressed too, and I'm sure impressed with Ali. Just because it's a cool clip, and even though it has almost nothing to do with poop, here's what it sounded like when Ali's team took off into the night leading the Iditarod.
Start up, boys. All about ready?
Oh,
Alan Moore there saying, "I love you, baby." Allie Zirkle turning back, not sure if you can hear her, saying, "I love you too," mushing off into the dark. Alan would often mush the couple's A-team in the Thousand Mile Yukon Quest, then turn them over to Allie for the Iditarod, and then he would mush a B-team of puppies. And during those years, Allie was a top contender, coming very close to being the first female Iditarod champion since Susan Butcher's last win in 1990. Butcher, of course, also won three Iditarods before that, consecutively from 1986 to 88. Among Zirkle's seven top 10 Iditarod finishes, she came in second 3 years in a row, 2012, 13, 14. She raced every year since then, too, up to 2021, which she had said would be her last Iditarod. That has proven to be true. She got banged up in that race, hit her head, and had to scratch. Zirkle now retired from dog mushing. Okay, enough with the serious stuff. Back to the bathroom humor and from poop to pee. Actually, this is kind of a serious topic. This next piece may be done in a fun way, though. Ben was wondering earlier in this year's race about the drug testing for the dogs. Mushers have to pee in a cup somewhere along the race to make sure they're not on drugs. And, you know, they have thumbs. They can hold a cup. But how does urine testing and more specifically collection work for the dogs?
My name is Lauren Afkin, and I am a canine urine collector.
Which sounds like a straightforward job, but can you tell me what that actually entails?
We collect three samples from randomly selected teams along the route to maintain the integrity of the race. So we just take a sample from three dogs from each of the teams and send them out to a lab for processing.
And then how do you, you know, make sure that you get that sample? Like, I mean, you can't just hand over a plastic bottle. Like, how do you get a sample?
So we have Ziploc baggies for the males that we will secure using an elastic band around their prepuce. So kind of around their, you know, area. And for the girls, we have a little wand that we put a bag on that we just try to non-invasively slide underneath her when she squats. So everyone gets a sterile collection baggie.
Does it take patience? Does it take skill? Like, what does it take to be successful?
Patience and skill, I guess. You just gotta watch them and know when they're getting ready, I suppose.
Totally. And then you told me the nickname. So what is there a nickname for this group?
Oh, we're called the P team.
The P team. Okay, the Golden Girls is a different.
Yes.
That's your own reference.
Ourselves, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And are you the team, or are there a couple or multiple teams like you?
There's another team out on the trail right now, collecting. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I could talk about this forever, obviously, but where do the samples go?
We put them in our cooler, and then they are processed back to a laboratory, or I'm not sure where, actually. we just follow the secure chain of custody and pass them off.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for informing us.
Thank you.
Okay, we just spent way too long on potty talk, but really, it feels like we didn't talk about poop as much as usual this year, so it kind of piled up. You could say we needed to get it out of our system. And the Iditapod is about to be out of your system, at least for this season. But before we go, how about one more listener question? We had three dogs of the day, so why not two questions? This one came in just today, and it's all the way from Scotland.
Hi, Iditapod team. My name's Ailey, and I'm calling you from Glasgow in Scotland. First of all, I want to say a big congratulations to Ryan on his victory. A historic victory for the whole Reddington family there. And a big good luck to all the dogs and all the people as well that are still out there on the trail. My question is about how dogs are named. I know that some of the litters are themed. Are they all like that? And also, I was wondering if they're not, how do they choose individual dogs' names? Thanks very much, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the great question, and you probably get this a lot from Americans. I gotta say, I love your accent. Thanks for listening all the way from Scotland, too. To answer this one, I'm jumping in the Wayback Machine to time travel back to 2019, when then-trail reporter Zachariah Hughes and I answered this very question. Something I've always been interested in, and something you asked the mushers about as a reporter on this race, is sort of this quirky thing about the dog mushing world. That's when a new litter of puppies is born. Oftentimes, there will be a theme to the names they're given. For example, Nick Petit has dogs from a litter named after champion Iditarod mushers. Libby, for example, is short for Libby Riddles, the first woman to win the race. This is a topic, the naming of different litters and using different themes, that Zach is really delighted by as well. And in Takatna, he recently found his new favorite examples.
I like litter names because they're usually funny, sometimes kind of self-referential and creative. A friend of mine in Nome had one litter named for cuts of beef, so ribeye, flank, and brisket. Another set of his dogs had weather-themed names like Rainy, Windy, and Flood. It's a lot more elemental. Rookie Blair Braverman, who's a writer, has a set of dogs named after famous authors. So Hunter S. Thompson, Gay Talese, and James Baldwin, those are some of them. Another litter she has is named after characters from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, a beloved movie and TV series from the 90s. But I have to say, so far, my favorite theme is Matt Fahler's heavy metal litter.
This is Iron Maiden. This is Pink Floyd, Pantera, Led Zeppelin, and Ronnie James Dio. And those are the heavy metal bands. And then my buddy Michael Baker, who's running our two-year-old slash B team, he has the hair metal, the glam rock, David Bowie, Billy Idol.
Twisted Sister.
Did you meet them already?
No, I'm just guessing. White Snake. Is White Snake in there?
We had a White Snake. We turned her into a pet dog. She wasn't really enjoying like the thousand mile perspective. So she's a pet dog in Michigan. And then I can't think of the other name. Oh, Van Halen, Motley Crue, and Bon Jovi. Yeah.
Poetic.
Gotta love the 80s.
The hair metal theme's cute, kind of kitschy. But I think the idea of naming a bunch of sled dogs after heavy metal bands like Pantera is funny, because the style of music, that heavy, sludgy, doomy whole genre, it's like the complete opposite of mushing in the middle of wilderness. But if that's the excuse you need to yell out things like G, Iron Maiden, or Ha, Twisted Sister, then I'm all for it.
Ah yes, the Slayer laid over everything. Classic. I was so much younger then, 4 whole years ago. That's my way of plugging our old Ididapod archives. This year's Iditarod and Ididapod are coming to a close, but you can still go back and relive those past races by scrolling back in your podcast feeds. Any time of year, whether it's mushing season or not, you can find those old episodes, as well as all of our stories and photos from this year and past years at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. We'll have another bonus episode, like I said, with Ryan Reddington's full press conference from Nome on Tuesday. But this is it for our full episodes of the Ididapod for this season. Thank you all so much for listening along with us. It means the world to us to hear from all of you, wherever in the world you might be. And along with snacks and the occasional nap, like the dogs, we appreciate and are fueled by all of that love. And a huge thanks to our Ididapod reporters, Lex Trinan and Ben Matheson. They'll be making their way back from Nome soon, hopefully catching up on sleep and snacks. They are the true, hardworking heroes of the Ididapod. Thanks also to Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon for editorial support. I'm not exaggerating at all when I say this. If it weren't for Tegan's tireless coordinating, writing, editing, and uploading all of the effort, among many other things, none of this would have been possible. I don't think we've heard from her on the Ididapod since episode 1, but Tegan's work has been vital and all over every episode of this season. So that's it for season 7 of the Ididapod. We'll probably be back for season 8 and next year's Iditarod. To help us make that decision, and if you're hoping to hear another season of this podcast, please do consider making a donation at alaskapublic.org. I think you can leave a note there to tell us why you're there, so maybe mention the Ididapod. Okay, I guess I'd better sign off now. Parting is such sweet sorrow. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate you. And until next time, happy trails.
What was the highlight?
Having you skate ski behind me trying to do an interview and seeing you wipe out.
get here to this point and go on and finish and hopefully go on and finish, you know. We will. I don't want to jinx it. But it's proud dad moment.
Cool. Congratulations, and we'll see you in Nome.
Thank you. Don't eat your poop cone.
We're gonna record and I did a pod. We're gonna record an Ididapod. Diddy 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 doo doo doo.
Why do you like watching the Iditarod go by?
I don't know.
Do you like dogs?
Yeah.
Why do you like dogs?
Because I like to see them poop on the track.
Have they been pooping?
Yeah.
That seems like it's funny to you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about the dogs besides them pooping that you like?
Because they chase cats. Huh?
They chase cats. That's fun. Yeah.
That's okay. Sorry if I ask her a question?
Yeah, Monica.
Hi, I'm Casey. I work for the radio station. What's your name?
Monica.
And are you having fun today?
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about all of this?
The doggies.
That's a good answer. What do you like about dogs?
Because they're so soft.
Also a good answer.